Welcome to the Daily Objective, day 165 of the war in Israel. I'm joined by the returning James Valiant. James, how's it going?
It's wonderful, and thank you, boss, for the break last week. I really appreciated that. Occasionally, even I need to take a breather, so thank you, boss.
Well, you've come back for a topic that might make you want to take another break. So we're going to talk about Qatar and their funding of U.S. universities. Qatar is the largest foreign donor to U.S. Universities since 9/11 specifically. We'll talk about that. Your first thoughts on it before we get into the details of what they're doing, why they're doing it, what this means, and why we're letting them.
Okay. Obviously, any influence that Qatar has over our American educational system, especially at the university level, is going to be pernicious, is going to be evil. These people, the way, just listen to the way the Qatari government responded to October 7th. It's disgusting. And it is no accident, obviously, that Qatar oomped up its subsidies to American universities in the wake of what? 9/11, more than 20 years ago. And you're absolutely right. It is astonishing the range of American universities that are getting a huge amount of money, each of them. And Qatar turns out to be significantly, by far, the biggest foreign donor to American universities. Now, we can talk about the separation of state and economics. We can talk about the several other things that are related to this. I think the most fundamental issue is that American universities were already ideologically predisposed to be positive to the Qatari message. If we can imagine in a science fiction world, say an objectivist state, a land of rational individualists, and they were subsidizing, trying to subsidize American private universities, I think they would get a big fat no. Because these universities have such, they're so rich, they are, so, they, American universities are just a classic example of cronyism. They are quasi-state organizations. Their customers are subsidized. They're subsidized directly in other ways by the federal government and their research projects and other projects they do, diversity, equity, and inclusion stuff. That is directly subsidized by the federal government. Plus, they have these huge endowments from alumni. And now, recently, because of the anti-Semitism on campus, wealthy alumni donors have been pulling back. And that's a good sign, but you can see they are just a drop in the bucket compared to the hundreds of millions of dollars that are flooding into American universities from an evil state like Qatar. Now, if American university, if there was a separation of state and education, as there should be, if there weren't all these subsidies, universities would be much more subject to their customers, to the students, to the parents who pay for this in large part, and things like that. Rather than sitting on these big fat endowments where they can ignore men like, Ackerman, who are trying to bring attention to anti-Semitism on US university campuses, they can basically ignore because, after all, they've got this big fat donor in Qatar. But as I say, I think there's an underlying cultural issue as well. I think they would have, if we had the same money as Qatar, I think they would have told us to just hit the road and we won't be affected. They are affected, it seems to me, by Qatar's influence directly and in an evil, pernicious way, precisely because of one, the ideological predispositions that the universities had even 20 years ago, and the quasi-state nature of American universities.
Yeah, as you mentioned, the ideas the Qatari government wants universities to promote are not, not much of a departure from the ideas that they were already trying to ingrain in their students. Kind of like yesterday's episode when we talked about Nazis who fled after World War II to Arab countries. It didn't take much to convince Arabs to hate Jews. They already did. They just had a kind of a Europeanized version of it.
You know what's kind of disgusting, connected to yesterday's show, though, is that you can see what's happening. The greater, I hate to even give it this title, the greater intellectual sophistication of Nazi ideas and intellectuals actually improved Islamicism's ideological approach, if you will. You put improve, of course, in quotes. Dramatically decayed it, but it gave, in one sense, but it made it more powerful. And similarly here, the sanction of Western intellectuals, whether it's Professor Finkelstein or, I mean, perhaps you can really see the influence when Harvard sets this, okay, we've got an anti-Semitism task force. Everyone has seen what a joke their anti-Semitism task force is. Could that be the result in any way of Qatar's large endowments to American universities? They're not going to ignore it. They're going to have an influence on it, both because of their ideological predisposition. Their fat economic subsidies from government puts them in a position to do this. I would be comfortable with a free market in education because it would be pretty clear that if you were going to come out and be, communist you or Islamo-fascist you, it would be pretty clear from if we had a decent culture, if we had a free market in education, it would become quite clear. And I don't think most people would be in America would be attending Islamo-fascism you or communist you. Not yet, at least in America.
Yeah, now thank you, Bonnie, for the super chat, and thank you, Ideology, for the super chat. There's a question there of whether or not and whether or not this can be prevented and how. If you declare Qatar an enemy country, I'm guessing Iran wouldn't be allowed to invest. I don't know if they're declared officially an enemy country, but if you declare them an enemy, there is no question they cannot subsidize they cannot fund universities or anything within the US. But the US not only does not see Qatar as an enemy, they see them as an ally. Not only the US, Israel, who suffered the worst terrorist attack in its history a few months ago by an organization funded by Qatar in part, and whose leaders live in Qatar in fancy hotels, and whose ideas are promoted by Qatar to the West on their propaganda network, which, by the way, we'll talk about tomorrow. Israel sees them as not an ally, but a sort of a partner, an intermediary for peace, while they're spending all this money trying to turn the West against itself. Now, there's your thoughts on that, and then I'll get to another point.
Yes. If the United, let's consider, let's just go up the stair steps here. If the United States had no diplomatic relationships with these evil governments, like Qatar, just cut off diplomatic relationship. Israel and America both review Qatar as an essential intermediary. Well, who else are we going to use to talk as an intermediary to talk to Iran or to talk to these savage terrorists? And Qatar, of course, happy to do, to deal work with savage terrorists is the problem. And that's why we shouldn't have any economic diplomatic relations. And if we cut off diplomatic relations, that would already put a big red flag on any subsidies from these people. You're absolutely right, though. If we were, had properly gone to war with Iran and put a Qatar on the states that help sponsor terrorism, then suddenly we would have a legal justification for looking into and preventing this. Obviously, if you're at war with the Nazis can't open Nazi U in the middle of World War II in the United States or subsidize Harvard University in the middle of World War II. The government has every right to step in at that point. So if we treated Iran and Qatar properly, that would help end part of the problem right off the bat. But no, we're busy sanctioning evil states like that. We're busy sanctioning Qatar because, well, gosh, who else are we going to use as intermediaries to talk to these monsters? It is disgusting.
Yeah, and the world we live in today didn't start on October 7, 2023. It didn't start on September 11, 2001. There have been many decades of appeasement, growing appeasement by the West of its enemies, and a part of that is, something that people don't ask often is where did their money come from? And people, if they ask it, the answer will be, well, the oil, they're sitting on oil. So what? So what if they're sitting on oil? We know wealth, unlike what the left will tell us, is not something that exists and then is taken by whoever, and the government should step in and redistribute it. It is created. Wealth is created. And that oil, was there for a long time. It was useless. Nobody knew what to do with it. And it was not, to be blunt, it was not somebody riding their camel through the desert, coming across it, deciding
You
to shove it up
mentioned
the camel's ass and
environmental.
going 500 miles an hour.
Exactly.
It was Western companies, Western mines discovering oil, discovering how this can actually be used,
And an industrial civilization that would buy the oil from them once the West showed them how to even access it. Now, think about that. And think about it. If the United States was not engaged in an overt war against fossil fuels, if the United States actually produced the energy that it could produce, if the West in general was not in a death grip by these green environmentalist types, the West could have all the nuclear power, all the fossil fuel energy, without that would make it, them absolutely useless. We could destroy the economies of the Middle East if we developed a free market in energy in the West. We have plenty of resources here. We have the technology to do it, and we have superior markets to make it cheaper and cleaner. So there's no way we need to depend on these Middle Eastern savages for oil at all. We've set up the entire economic situation, which makes them rich, which gives them the money to give to Harvard.
Yeah,
But it's very disturbing that they
and again,
can and do.
it's not their oil. This was expropriated from the people who discovered it and discovered what to do with it.
I
So,
stand corrected. Our oil, that but I mean theirs in the sense
our
that they're the
oil,
ones selling it now.
here's the thing, our oil that we're paying them for, and then with that money, they kill us and promote ideas that turn the West against itself.
Oh no, we're busy heavily helping Iran and Qatar and all these countries get richer and richer and richer, looking the other way as Iran sells oil to China and gets billions and billions. And where do you think all the money and supplies for weapons for Hezbollah and Hamas come from? Iran, of course, and all the money that we allow them to. But we're even making a broader point. The entire wealth of the Middle East based on oil is completely an artifact our energy policy in the West, of our blindness to our actual needs. You nailed it, Razi, right on the head.
Yeah, now one of the things I heard Qatar invested in was the they had a deal with Northwestern University Journalism School is basically has a deal with Al Jazeera, because if you want to be a proper journalist, Al Jazeera is the way. And by the way, once again, watch our episode tomorrow about Al Jazeera's actual terrorist reporters. Just to get a but of course anything you watch from Al Jazeera will tell you everything you need to know about that channel. It is a pro-terrorist channel speaking in English to Westerners to explain to us why we're evil and wish we should capitulate to them.
I would just note to foreign observers who might not know this, Northwestern University is one of the leading journalism schools in America. If you want to be an elite journalist working for the New York Times, you go to Columbia University, Northwestern, maybe Mizzou. There are two or three top journalism schools in America, and one of them is Northwestern, and it's the journalism school that specifically is being subsidized there. So our elite journalists in America are being trained with Qatari money, and you're telling me that that's not going to have an influence? I doubt it.
Michelle asked in the chat, is that where the Hamas journalists studied? Either that or in Iran. Yeah, that's I we look at the world and we look at the different levels at which I'm thinking about how the historians, how they're going to write this, and I don't know if they them will write it in postmodern intersectional. I kind of think these are not the people who are going to end up winning. It could be history might be written in Arabic, but the joke will be a big joke, and it'll be on us because we are we've talked about how Israel's war is unprecedented in that it sends its soldiers to die unnecessarily. We saw this operation in Shifa over the last couple of days, the hospital where Israel has already operated, but operated with kid gloves, operated in a way that minimizes civilian casualties. Two soldiers died that were reported on in those operations unnecessarily, because the right thing to do with Shifa Hospital would have been to take it down before October 7th, take it down with everybody who's in there. As sad as it might be that maybe truly innocent people, i.e. children, might die, the fault is of the terrorists hiding there. The fact is, Israel is letting its enemy live, feeding it to make sure it lives and can fight, and the world is still against Israel and claiming that Israel is committing a genocide. And then we see something like this, and we see it all the time. Their influence is not just in universities, that's the topic today, but it is throughout. I'm in London. Much of London is owned by Qatar. I think the parts that aren't owned by Russia are owned by Qatar.
See that, yeah, we could say a million times over, but I really have to return to this idea. The ideas were already friendly. We have to abandon this Marxist colonialism. Deeper still, we have to abandon this altruism. Deeper still, we have to abandon this cultural and epistemological and moral relativism and intrinsicism. Altruism, collectivism, mysticism, they are the enemy. But those were the ideas that were already friendly to our enemies. And these wealthy Qatari interests are having this outsized influence only because of the ideological conditions that already exist in the West. It really is. And it's not just in the media, but here you see it. Here you see the direct connection. And again, you nailed it exactly right, Rosie.
Yeah, and some things need to be repeated when we're talking about Western appeasement of our enemies in the Middle East. One of the things that needs to be repeated is Ayn Rand's answer to a question in 1980 during the hostage crisis in Iran, which is, a symbol in the history of American appeasement. The question was, what should be the U.S. policy in the Iranian crisis? How should we get the hostages back? And this is Ayn Rand's answer. Never to allow the country to get into that situation. It's certainly the fault of our foreign policy, and at present, there is no right course of action. It's too late. If we didn't march with force the first or second day after the hostages were taken, nothing we do after that will be any good, and it'll take us years to live it down. The only problem with that quote is that it'll take us years to live it down. We haven't lived it down. We've
We
made it
have
worse.
not lived.
We've made it worse because we've doubled down on that policy.
Indeed, we've continued the very thing that she said. It started, I think, a lot of this appeasement of Islamicism started with the way the West did not react to the horrible atrocities at the Munich Olympics in the 1970s, for example, and the Iranian hostage crisis. Back in the 1970s, the West was setting itself up for just an ever-increasing dose of terrorism and horrors like 9/11 and October 7th and all of the vicious Islamic violence that we've seen in the last 30 years. You're absolutely right. Within 2 or 3 days, those hospitals should have been destroyed because we knew they were being used intentionally by Hamas. And we should have said, Hamas using hospitals is what kills mothers and babies in maternity wards. It's not our self-defense actions in perfectly reasonable self-defense. And why within 2 or 3 days of October 7th, Gaza City wasn't reduced to complete rubble, and indeed every urban center in Gaza wasn't reduced to rubble, is just a mystery to me. That should have been the thing that protected Israeli soldiers, protected the interests of the West, and sent the correct psychological and epistemological message that they weren't to blame for hospitals that get destroyed because they use hospitals in aggressive ways. They are killing their own mothers and babies in maternity wards, not Israel, not the West. But she was absolutely right. If you don't do it from the beginning, if we didn't have a strong reaction from the beginning, every day that passes, it becomes more and more clear that it actually is a positive net benefit to the bad guys. Keep doing it, guys. You're just going to get more rewards until it climaxes. And listen, you've got Lord Cameron, the foreign minister, saying offering great rewards to the Islamic fascists among the Palestinians in the offering a two-state solution, which is obviously impossible to anyone with any eyes in their heads at this point. But yet, there is Lord Cameron offering a big fat plum, as I've said, to the bad guys, to the quote Palestinians, this two-state solution for in the wake of the atrocities of October 7th.
Yeah, and again, Israel's policy is resulting in not just its own soldiers dying, not just Hamas's military capabilities still being very much alive and well, but also in this picture that's becoming clearer and clearer that they have won. And by the way, I've said again and again, the operation should, besides being much more severe, should also be extended to the West Bank. Michelle mentions in the chat there was another terrorist attack today in Gush Etzion. Yeah, and Michelle, I'm sure you saw that, as the main headline in the BBC and Al Jazeera and CNN. Or maybe not, because it is an attempt to murder Jews, so it's not news. Thank you, Jeff, for the super chat. Michael asks a question that we're all asking: is IDF going to invade Rafah, or are they just going to keep hemming and hawing? Well, Netanyahu spoke to Biden, was it yesterday or the day before, and said that an Israeli delegation will go to Washington to explain the Rafah operation or something to that effect. So Israel is talking about Netanyahu keeps talking about again, rhetorically, he's often great. He's right. This has to happen. If not, Israel hasn't won. And he keeps repeating that. So I don't know how we can walk that back. But the fact is, every day, every moment that passes, and Israel has been talking about it for over a month now. Every day that passes, Hamas is reorganizing more. They're rearming because nobody's actually checking those aid convoys, and they are, with every day, that more soldiers are going to die. More hostages might be dying. If not dying, they might be suffering something worse than death. And the chances of getting to them are being reduced to near zero. So Israel is harming its operation if it does end up happening in Rafah. And of course, the international pressure works on Israel. So Israel, whatever it might eventually do, it'll be less than what it should do and less than what it would have done had it gone in right away. So
No, we were getting signals from Biden early on that should have had Netanyahu saying, "I'm not going to tell you what the hell I'm going to be doing in Rafah or anywhere else. Go pound sand, Mr. Biden. You have no influence over what we're going to do. Get the hell out of here," is what should have happened. Now that you've heard from the Senate leader, Mr. the Schmuck Schumer, who, by the way, in his statement disgustingly undermines the morale of the good guys here. I just want to, I know I wasn't a participant in that reality show you did last week on this, but I just want to say strongly and clearly that I'm disgusted by the way Schumer is treating America's one ally in the area, undermining their morale, encouraging the morale of the bad guys in saying that they should be elections and Netanyahu should go. Again, more interference from American leadership into what Israel should do or not do in the middle of this war, in the wake of October 7th. It is absolutely disgusting and vile. I reject the idea that because America gives aid, military and otherwise, to Israel, that somehow America has a right to tell Israel what to do. In wartime, that's outrageous. Absolutely outrageous, in my view, and I reject it altogether. We
by the
either give
way,
Israel aid or we don't give Israel aid. No strings attached. They're the good guys here, okay? Especially in this context.
and there's an irony that America also gives to countries and territories that are controlled by a dictator, and they don't actually tell that dictator
No strings there, huh?
yeah, no,
No
but they
strings
want
there.
Israel's
Or how
the
about the
thing
way
is
we subsidize the UN in general?
the
No
thing is
strength there, huh?
Yeah, the thing is, your political leadership anywhere is a product of your culture, of the ideas that are prevalent in the culture. And I think we're going to miss Chuck Schumer, in a couple of decades. Because, if you look at the universities, yeah, look at the, again, look, going back to our story today, look at the universities, look at who's funding them, but look at also what's being taught there. Because, you can have silent funders. I don't think Qatar are that, but, if you look at, there was this poll. I don't have it in front of me. I don't remember what exactly. I think it was 52% or something like that of Americans aged 18 to 20 something think that the solution to the conflict is Hamas taking over Israel. So, many, many people in
Young
that
people, it's
age group
frightening.
are in universities, and the leaders of tomorrow are going to be from among those people. And yeah, we will miss Chuck Schumer,
You know,
if those are the ideas of.
how disturbing is that? How disturbing is that? That Chuck Schumer is going to be missed. I mean, here is the, I normally don't do this. He is the highest ranking Jewish member of the United States Congress. He is the Senate Majority Leader. He is himself a New York Jewish, and he identifies himself as, I am Jewish. I'm a Jewish American. And here he is undermining Israel right now. I find that despicable. But he's gonna, you're absolutely right. The next step, the American universities. Yeah, why not? To see the numbers with young people, 18 to 25, and to see the exact opposite opinion for the for everyone who's in America, there's a strong support for Israel among older people, among adults. They're the ones who strongly support Israel, and I think there is support for Israel among the, oh, let's put it this way, the more mature population in America. So we ask ourselves, what is causing this for 18 to 25-year-olds? Well, they happen to be university age people. So I think you can't ignore the connection between universities and the ideological poison. But as I say, there's all kinds of ideologically related poison that they're also and have long been getting that supports this hatred of civilization, anti-Semitism, altruism, pseudo-Marxist colonialist pseudo-thought. All of that has already prepared the groundwork in universities. And so now you have, well, of course, Qatar coming in with its hundreds and millions of dollars to these universities, and they can't help but have an influence. And I'm afraid a greater influence than the heroes like Ackerman and other alumni who are trying to bring attention to the fact of anti-Semitism on our elite campuses. And it is the worst and the elite ones. It's the Harvards, the Yales, the Columbias, the Princetons that are, as you go up the elite scale, it seems to get worse and worse ideologically for Israel and the need for civilization as such.
Phil asked in the chat how he can get a copy of Creating Christ in the UK. Get in touch, we'll hook you up. You can hope. There's that quote by Winston Churchill. It's something like, anybody who isn't a socialist when he's 20 doesn't have a heart. Anybody who isn't a conservative when he's 40 doesn't have a head, or something like that. I don't particularly like that quote, but I get the thought behind it. These university students at some point will, have to stop being parasites and have to go into the world and actually produce what they consume more or less, and might be confronted with reality and might change some of their views. But that just slows the decline. I don't know how far away they will travel ideologically from where they are now.
You'll
And
notice how
I don't.
ethics is transmitted in an emotionalist way. You notice how ethics, in a pre-objective ethics world, ethical values are mostly transmitted emotionally. And so you can have a phenomenon like a secular place like Great Britain, maybe the most atheist country in the world, who is deeply mired in altruism. It's like altruism is embedded into the British soul. It's an emotionalist pitch. And so when Churchill says something like that, what he's confessing is that our emotional predispositions are set by an irrational altruism that only practical experience in the real world can correct. First of all, I question. It's true that real world experience will turn some university graduates more into a capitalist or rational direction once they have some real world experience. That's true. But I don't think we should take as an axiom emotional altruism as our given.
We are out of time tomorrow on the Daily Objective, Al Jazeera's terrorist reporters. Make sure you tune in for that right after, well, right in a minute after we end this show, the reality show, Why Self-Hating Jews Hate Jews. James, where can people find more from you?
There is a website that I think is accessible in the UK, www.creatingchrist.com. It's also available through barnesandnoble.com if you can't get it through UK Amazon.com, but it is available through both Barnes and Noble and Amazon.com, or check out our website to get links. Otherwise, you can find me on Facebook, where I'm answering questions about Israel and objectivism and creating Christ every day. I'm on X as well. But catch me here at Ayn Rand Center UK, where I'm a regular.
I'm also a regular here. I'm at Razi Ginsberg on X, and I am in the Yaldei HaMidrachov podcast for those of you who speak Hebrew with my friend Naftali. It is in Hebrew. It's twice a week. You should watch it. It's new. Thanks. Thanks, James. Sorry, reality show loyal viewers who don't like this show and only watch that show because we have taken over a couple of minutes of that show's time. But thanks, James, and we'll see you in a minute. Bye.